I'm John Shannon. This is NHL Induction Class, and I'm thrilled to be joined by one of the best hockey play-by-play men in the history of the game, and currently the voice of Hockey Night in Canada, Jim Hewson. He's now a member of that Foster Hewitt Award group. Congratulations, Jim.
Thank you. It sounds kind of weird for me. It's certainly not something that that I aspired to or even thought about, but to have an award that's named after the guy who created the terminology for the job that I do is really something when you think back on it. And then I always think back and about Foster and how he created the terminology for play-by-play, because nobody done it before. And think about him sitting beside the rink, and how did he come up with he shoots, he scores, and what were the alternatives?
Tough to beat. Lloyd Pettit tried shot and a goal, who is the great voice in Chicago, and there's a few guys that emulated him. I would suggest that Foster did the one thing that I think every production person would love in a broadcaster, is he kept it simple.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's the magic of what Foster's play-by-play was all about. And I would think that it means a little more to you, because you did become the television voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs for a short period of time, so and have been in and around Toronto many times and lived here for a while, of what Foster means particularly to the city of Toronto.
Well, yeah, and then the first years that I broadcast on television were mostly from Maple Leaf Gardens.
Right.
So, and I don't think at that point they'd even called it the Foster Hewitt Gondola, but it was the gondola where Foster Hewitt worked to a certain extent, and certainly Bill Hewitt had worked there. Mm-hmm. And many of the great legendary play-by-play and color commentators of our game had worked in that building in that particular spot. So, it is quite meaningful when you think about it. And what he did is absolutely, you're absolutely right. It was the simplest version of what we do. Now we've added layers upon layers upon layers to that, but what remains is the simple mechanism for calling the game, mm-hmm. and it still works beautifully.
Let's go back a little bit. You grew up in northern British Columbia. Actually, probably listened, I would suspect, to Edmonton radio more than you did Vancouver radio. Is that fair?
No. At night when I went to bed, I was in Fort St. John, British Columbia. I was born in Dawson Creek. My father was a grain buyer for the Alberta Wheat Pool. And when they pushed a road at a bridge across the Peace River, he took a job 47 miles north in Fort St. John. So that's where I grew up. And as I grew a little older and listened to the radio, when I went to bed at night, the signal in the north would be crystal clear. So I could listen to C-Fun Radio in Vancouver and listen to music.
1410.
Absolutely, but only late at night. And so my mother got used to coming into the bedroom in the morning and turning the radio off, because the signal wouldn't be very good by the time we got up. It would only work in the middle of the night. And beyond that, John, there really wasn't much to listen to except a local radio station. And I listened to that a lot because my hockey background and growing up around the game was not so much the National Hockey League, because we just didn't have it. Mm-hmm. We had Saturday night and we didn't have the whole game. But the local team, the Fort St. John Flyers, in a wonderful senior outlaw league, they played just about every Saturday night. And if they were at home, we were at the game. And if they were on the road, we sat around the kitchen table and listened to the game on the radio. So that's where I first, I don't know if that was an inspiration to me, but I know that's the way I listened to hockey games. And those are the first ones that I heard. And it was exciting for me. And going to the games was absolutely terrific, because everyone in our small town of 6,000 people packed the arena when the Fort St. John Flyers played. And those players were, and still are for me, larger than life.
Well,
the best players I'd ever seen.
The other part of it is that you were part of a Saturday doubleheader every Saturday night too, because you could watch the NHL and then still go to the game.
Absolutely, and we did. So when the Flyers were on the road, it was a wonderful thing at our house because we had TV tables. Do you remember what they are?
I do.
We had TV tables, these folding tables that you could get out. And Saturday, when the game was on television, was the only night we were allowed to eat in the living room. And my mother would make something exotic that I'd never heard of before, and she'd make it every Saturday. And we could eat on the TV tables and watch the game. But if the Flyers weren't home, so here's what happened those days. It was very cold in the north in the wintertime. And we would go to the game on Saturday night. And my job, we had season tickets, and we sat right on the blue line. No glass, no chicken wire in front of us, just the game. And I'd watch my hockey heroes. And, for example, when we played road hockey in those days, as an aside, I never wanted to be Dave Keon or Jean Beliveau or anybody like that. I wanted to be Jimmy Anderson. And those are he was the best right winger on the Fort St. John Flyers and the best player in the South Peace Hockey League. And those guys were my heroes because I watched them live and they were so good. So we'd go to the game and it'd be very cold outside. And when the first intermission came, my dad would hand me the car keys and I'd go out and start the car, because we didn't want it to freeze up. So I would sit in the car for the intermission and listen to the Hot Stove League on the radio. Mm. And these were the local guys, the local newspaper writer, the radio guys, and they'd just talk about the game. And perhaps that, too, is an inspiration for what I've done in my career, or at least it got it started, because I was really interested in what they talked about, and I would sort of compare what I thought about watching the game to what they were talking about, and then I'd go back in and tell my dad. We watched the second period, and then in the second intermission, I had to repeat, go out and start the car again, because if you didn't in those days, you had to get a boost to get home for the most part, because your car would freeze up.
Man, there's no plug-ins out there then.
No, hey, not a chance.
So do you remember the first time you were on the air?
Oh, yeah. Well, the first time I did a game.
No, so, but first, when, like, we all get the bug at some point. We are a different breed.
Yeah.
When was the first time you were on the air and it was your voice going, whether it was in Fort St. John or Prince George or where was the first time?
It would have been in Fort St. John in my hometown. So I was I was unusual. I shouldn't say that because that sounds... I was different because I was probably the only kid in school who was on the junior hockey team and in the drama club. So we had... I had this wonderful teacher, Jim Hoffman, who was an English teacher, and he was also ran the drama club. And we did these wonderful plays every year, two a year, and took classes with him. And he was just a terrific man, very creative. And he got quite a few of us really interested in the drama club and being in plays and acting. And so what we would do I think it was probably about grade 10 that I was in, when he went to the local radio station and made a deal with them. He didn't really make a deal. He just offered to do some radio plays. So that was the first time. They would give us a half an hour on a Sunday afternoon where we would put together a one or two act radio play. And that's the first time I was ever on the air. But through that, the manager of the local radio station, who I knew pretty well anyway, because he knew everybody in town, he listened to them, and he came back to me shortly thereafter while I was in high school and offered me a job on weekends ripping wire copy and reading the news and weather.
Wow.
So,
hey, do you remember any of the plays you did?
No, I can't remember any of the radio plays. I remember many of the plays that we did at school, and that we entered in festivals and things like that.
Right.
But I don't remember any of the radio plays. I do remember, though, reading the news and thinking it was a big deal. In those days, there was something called Opportunities for Youth. Do you remember that?
No.
It was a government grant, and it was Opportunities for Youth. And I believe the government would pay half the salary if you hired young people and got them into the workforce. So the radio station wasn't being that benevolent. They hired me, but they knew they could get half of it. And I think I got paid $400 a month when I went on full time for the summer while I was still in high school. So they probably paid me about $200 a month, and the government paid me $200. But I got a chance to work a regular job at the radio station, and thought I quite liked it.
And so you went to school. What did you do after that?
Well, I went off to school. So through all of these acting classes and drama, I was able to apply for a number of scholarships and actually got a few of them. So my initial plan was that I was going off to the University of Victoria, and I was going to make my way in the theater world and be an actor. So I did go off to UVic, and funny thing about university, I found that after a short period of time, it didn't pay very well. And all the while, I'd had this opportunity. I knew I could go back to work at the radio station in Fort St. John pretty much any time. And so I did. I didn't quite finish my first year at university. I paid the scholarships back, much to the chagrin of my mother. Mm-hmm. I left university and went back to Fort St. John to work at the radio station for $400 a month again. And the long story short is when I got back there, it was winter time, and a fellow named Mike Gray, who was the sports director, which sounds like a pretty fancy title, but at a small radio station, the sports director also had a sales route, and he was, you know, Herb Tarlick. Sure. And he was the only person in the sports department of which he was the director. Mike left, got a better job, as was often the case in small radio stations, and he went off to Edmonton. And I was the only guy in the place who knew a puck from a football. So
congratulations, you're the sports director.
I became the sports director, but I also had a sales route, and I also had to work Sunday mornings and, you know, filling all the machines and getting everything ready. You were multitasking constantly.
Sure.
In a small radio station. But that's when I first got a chance to broadcast hockey games. And my first broadcast was a Fort St. John Flyer game, which was quite meaningful to me because, as I alluded to earlier, that's the team that I grew up with. Mm. I knew them intimately, and I was really excited to get a chance to do that.
Fort St. John is not the end. It's the beginning. How did you get to Vancouver?
Oh, in a very circuitous route. In those days, I mean, I didn't. If I was going to move somewhere, the only reason I was doing it is because I was trying to make a little more money each month.
Sure.
And I knew that I could make more if I got to a bigger market. That's just the way it worked in the radio business. So my first move was to move from Fort St. John to Penticton, in the Okanagan Valley. And for that, I was paid $600 a month, and I thought I was doing really well. But I didn't last very long there because up the road, there was a guy in Kelowna that heard my work, and I was given an extra $50 a month after several months in Penticton to move to Kelowna, where I stayed for quite a little while, but I was not actually doing play-by-play of games because that's what he did. Mm. His name was Sandy Brown.
Sure.
And Sandy hired me, but basically he hired me to work in the sports department, but also to be the color commentator, which I'd never done before, but that's okay. I could bluff my way through that. So we traveled around all through the BC Hockey League in those days, and usually the commissioner at the time, the late Brian Cooling, would travel with us. He'd hop in the back seat. This would give him an opportunity to move around the league. Mm-hmm. We were all young guys, and we drove all over the interior of British Columbia watching hockey games, and I was the color commentator for the Kelowna Buckaroos.
Sure. That was the days of the V's, the Buckaroos. Vernon's team had different names. I think it might have been the Panthers at that point. But
yeah, you know what? I think Vernon missed a couple of years in there, too, in one of the changeovers.
But Kamloops Rockets.
Kamloops Rockets. Merritt Centennials.
Yeah.
Merritt was really an interesting little place because they hated the Kelowna Buckaroos, and you know, the bus was often sabotaged, and there were all sorts of derisive chants. It was a really interesting place to go and watch a hockey game, and they were tough. They were tough games. And then every once in a while, we'd make the tour down to the coast part of the league.
Sure.
And the Nanaimo Clippers had a team. The Langley Lords.
Wow.
Chilliwack had a team. So we traveled around British Columbia watching hockey games and spent a couple of winters doing that before I moved on. But
did you know by then that play-by-play was where you wanted to be?
Not really, because I wasn't doing as much of it as I wanted to. I was still in the mode where I would have moved to Timbuktu to read the news if I got $50 more a month. That's just the way it was, you know?
Sure.
I liked every aspect of the radio business. I really liked doing sports. I loved the hockey at that point, too, because I was still playing. One of the things that, like, I didn't own very much. So when I left the North, and I had a car, but really, you know, I had a few items of clothing. I had no furniture, but everywhere I went, I had a hockey bag in my car. Mm-hmm. Everywhere I traveled with my hockey bag, and it became my social conduit, because anywhere you go, anywhere I went, I could find a place to play. I could find guys who had either a league or just a pickup game, and I met a lot of people. I got to play the game, and usually it led me to some pretty good circles of friends everywhere that I went. And that was a staple in my travels when I was a young single guy. And so I quite enjoyed that. But I didn't get a chance to really dig into play-by-play till I got to Vancouver. And before I got there, I had a stop in Brandon, Manitoba. In a year when the Brandon Wheat Kings were absolutely fabulous, it was 1979, mm-hmm. and their team consisted of one line that was the most fabulous line I've ever watched play hockey. It was Ray Allison, Brian Propp, and Laurie Boschman. Mm-hmm. And I always joked in the press box that I should have just a stamp for my scorebook, because those three were involved in just about every goal the team scored. They seldom lost. They went to the Memorial Cup and lost in overtime in the final of the Memorial Cup to the Peterborough Petes. And so, but I wasn't able to do play-by-play because I had gone out to Brandon to work for a radio station that just went on the air, and they didn't have the rights. Yeah. So we were working all through that year to build a relationship with the team so that we could eventually get the broadcast rights. And so what they did was they sent me with the team. So I traveled with them, and I sat next to the late Dunk McCollum, who was the coach of the team.
Right.
And he was one of the most fabulous men I've ever met. And he was so kind to me. He taught me the game, helped me do my job. We did these interview shows every night. And I just traveled around learning the game from him. And it was a pretty good year to learn a bit about the game, because they were such a good team. That Brad McCrimmon was also on defense on that team, and his brother Kelly mm-hmm. joined the team as well. So there was a fabulous hockey team. So I spent the winter doing that. And out of the blue, in the spring, after having been through the coldest winter of my entire life in Brandon.
Hold on. Colder than Fort St. John?
Oh, my God. It was so much colder. And by then, I was still traveling around with a vehicle that everything I owned fit in the trunk. And I had an old Volvo. And at the Keystone Center in Brandon, it was the first time I'd ever seen where at the end of the game, they had a tow truck that drove around the parking lot, helping people boost their vehicles if they froze up during the game. And I became friends with the tow truck driver, because he had to stop in my car every night and get me going so that I could get out of there. Some nights it just wouldn't start, so I'd just leave it there and go back a day or two later. But in the spring, having done that for a year, in the springtime, I got a call. Just out of nowhere, I hadn't applied for any jobs. I don't think I had anyway. For me, it was a call out of the blue from a man named Al Davidson, and Tiger Al, as he was known,
sure.
was this larger than life personality at CKNW Radio.
Before you get there, I'll get you back there.
Okay.
What tweaked me right now is that from your time in the North, your time in the in the Okanagan, you go to the prairies, you get a real sense of love of the game of hockey and where it fits into each community. You talk about what it was like in Merritt, different in Kelowna, and certainly different in Brandon. And that gives you a dimension that I think's so important even today, isn't it?
I think so. I don't think you do it. That's not what I was looking for.
No, but it becomes part of the fabric of how you deal with the game.
Oh, without question. Because not only was it the game that provided me with my living, because in each of these stops, that's basically what I ended up doing, whether I had intended to do that or not. I always gravitated towards hockey because I knew that. I played. I was always involved in it. It was my social life. But it became even more encompassing. Like, all my friends were at the arena everywhere that I went. That, those are the people that I knew in the community. That's so, yeah, it, and plus the fact, you know, when I think back to it, it goes right back to my roots of going to the games in Fort St. John and going out to start the car and the intermissions. Sure. And everything was about the being around the game. And sometimes that sounds a bit nerdy, you know, but it wasn't, because that was just, that's just what you did in those towns.
Hey, come on, don't talk about nerdy. You were on the, you were in the drama club and on the junior hockey team. Come on.
Yeah, I know. And my father thought that was a bit weird. My mother loved it, but no, everything kept coming back to hockey.
All right, so Tiger Al at CKNW, the biggest station in Vancouver, the biggest station on heck in Western Canada, calls.
Right. So I know all about them because, you know, I grew up in British Columbia, but also one of the backstories to that is while I was working at CKNL in Fort St. John, Northern Lights Broadcasting. One of my jobs on a regular basis was to come in and work in the evenings when either the football games were on, the BC Lions, we carried their games in the north of BC, and we carried the Vancouver Canuck games. So I would sit in the studio and plug in the local commercials every time there was a break. And so I would sit and intently listen to Jim Cox, who did football games, and Jim Robson, who did the hockey games. So I knew where they originated. They originated from CKNW in Vancouver, and that was a, you know, I remember I was lying in bed as a little kid listening to CFUN in Vancouver, and that was a world that was so much bigger than I'd ever been in. And even when I was in Brandon, Manitoba, that was a world that was so much bigger than I'd ever been in and ever worked in. So when Al Davidson offered me a job, and he just gave me the start date, and honest to goodness, John, I didn't even ask him how much I was going to make, because I didn't care.
Right.
I took the job immediately. I didn't have to start until September, so I had a little bit of time off. And so I loaded up my car, threw my hockey bag in the back, and moved out to the West Coast. Really had no job description. Just knew that I was going to work in the sports department at CKNW. And once I got started, it opened up a world to me that I had never really expected.
So what year was that?
I want to say fall of 79, 78 or 79.
Okay.
So I was a really young guy, still just living out of the, you know, out of the trunk of my car. Found a place to live in Vancouver, and unbeknownst to me, part of the job became play-by-play of National Hockey League games, because Jim Robson at the time was one of the best in the business and was working for Hockey Night in Canada.
Sure.
So it was in the infancy of the Vancouver Canucks, and he would do games on Saturday night on television, and CKNW needed somebody to do the radio play-by-play.
In those days, the Canucks contract allowed them to do four games on Saturday night. Four during the regular season.
So that was the only, so during the regular season, those were the only four then. I thought it was more than that, actually.
But not in those days, no. Because I mean, this is where your life and my life start to cross paths.
Exactly.
Is because I actually produced those games on Hockey Night in Canada.
Right.
So I was flown in and did those with Jim.
And so Jim would do those, and then that's where I got my first opportunity to do play-by-play. Now, I convinced these guys, and I didn't really lie to them, but I convinced them that I'd done a lot more play-by-play than I really had. Because I'd done the Fort St. John Flyers, right?
You'd done the big time. Come on.
I ticked in Vs. And I don't know whether Al Davidson thought that I was doing play-by-play and all the time that I was out in Brandon, Manitoba. But I didn't tell him otherwise. And I convinced him that I could do the job. I must have auditioned for it at some point. And they must have heard me before they put me on the air. I don't remember that part. But I do remember the first Saturday night game and the first radio game in the NHL that I ever did. And it just happened that Jim was doing a game and the Vancouver Canucks were playing at the Forum in Montreal.
Wow.
And so that was my first game.
Are you kidding me?
In the broadcast in October. And I think it was 1979. But I know exactly where it was. I can't remember the exact date, but it was an early season game, a Saturday night at the Forum in Montreal. And I had been to the city before because the Memorial Cup had been there. So it wasn't like my first trip to Montreal, but it was my first trip to the broadcast booth in the National Hockey League. It was another night where the Vancouver Canucks got trampled in Montreal, and that happened on a regular basis in those days.
Sure.
But it didn't matter to me. It was bright lights. It was all red. It was the National Hockey League. And once I'd done that game, the hook was set. I thought, this is a life I could really get used to. And, you know, eventually did get an opportunity to do a lot more. So as the years went on, as you mentioned, there weren't many opportunities to do play-by-play for me in the regular season.
Mm-mm.
But I still wanted to practice the craft. So I still had a job at the games. I got to go down and do all of the interviews that went into the pre- and post-game shows and that sort of thing. So I got to meet the players. I spent a lot of time around the dressing rooms. And
what a huge advantage at that point. Because in many ways, Jim, you're the same age as the players then.
Oh, yeah.
And that and you were probably making almost as much.
Yeah, you're right. It was an interesting time because quite a few of the players were older than I was. I was, there weren't a lot of really, really young players in those days. It was an exception. No, there were no teenagers in the game.
No.
For the most part in those days. But, yeah, they were peers to a certain extent. And, excuse me, everything was wide open to me in those days. Like you had I don't even remember having a pass, but I remember going out to the Coliseum and, you know, you walk into the dressing room and sit down and talk to guys. And there was a real opportunity for one-on-one relationships and to learn a lot. And everybody was really accommodating and friendly, as I recall. There were some instances where it was really a different world for me. There was a stairway that went down in the Pacific Coliseum to the dressing rooms. And as you turn the corner to the left, there was the visiting dressing room where I would go all the time to get some interviews that would go into the pregame show.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the Philadelphia Flyers coming in, and I was still sort of in awe of them because, you know, they were at the tail end of the Broad Street Bullies. They'd won a couple of Stanley Cups. They still had the core of that team together, led by Bobby Clark. And they were still tough as can be. And they still had brawls, especially in Vancouver.
Did they ever?
But the vision that I have and what I remember more than anything else is walking down that stairway, turning left to the visitor's dressing room, and there were about 15 of the Philadelphia Flyers in the blue underwear issue of the day having a cigarette outside the dressing room.
at least
they were decent enough to go outside the room and then go back in and get ready to play. But it's a vision I still have in my mind that I just thought all of these hockey heroes of mine, and here they were having a dart outside the dressing room. So I would not only interview those guys, but then I would practice my craft. I would go during the game. I didn't really have a function because, you know, I did the pre and post and that sort of stuff.
Sure.
During the game, I would go up into the catwalk, the rail, the tiny little walkway that went from one side of the Pacific Coliseum to the other, right up in the rafters, and stand right over center ice looking down, and I would call the game into my pen just to practice. Now, the interesting thing about that is that I wouldn't even go across that catwalk now. I'd be terrified. But there I was as a young guy just hanging over the edge, practicing. I'd never tape it. I'd seldom ever tape it.
Really?
I would just call the game.
82 must have been fun though, because
fabulous.
Four rounds. You got you did a lot more play-by-play in the playoffs because Robson was assigned to a lot more television games. So that would have been fun.
I did all the home games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way they split it. Jim did television of the home games, and he did radio of the road games. So I didn't get to travel, but I got a lot of work. That's when that's when I really decided that this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do full time.
Right.
And then, much to the chagrin of the radio station and my bosses there, I quit at the end of the 82 playoffs, thinking, and I mean, this is how you think when you're a young guy, I was going to conquer the world, and I was going to get a play-by-play job. And so why wouldn't you just quit the job you have and wait for somebody to call? And I don't know if that made any sense at all, but I got really lucky after the, at the end of that summer that I got a call, and you were involved in that as well, because you had taped something that I and married what I've done on the radio.
Here's what we did. So that playoff run, I actually met you, and I, you know, we're about the same age. And I walk in, I'm wearing a navy blue blazer with a shirt and tie and gray slacks, looking like a cop. And you walk in, you got sneakers on, you got cutoffs, frayed cutoffs with holes in the pockets, with a Fu Manchu and a t-shirt.
And that's about all I had for clothing in those days.
But I remember it to this day, and we got introduced, and you were the radio guy filling in for Jim. I told you, send me an audio tape of one of the games in the it was in the Calgary Vancouver series. It was in that
first round of the 82 series.
And we then took the TV call or your radio call and took the TV video and married it together. And for all intents and purposes at Hockey Night in Canada, we created an internal audition tape for Jim Houston.
Right.
And that became the way you got introduced to particularly the guys in Toronto, because remember, right, this was before satellites.
They had no clue.
They wouldn't listen. They wouldn't watch. And you got noticed because of a 3/4-inch tape, videotape that had your call on Hockey Night in Canada video.
And I'm not really sure that I knew what you had done with it. If I sent you some audio, that you had married it to that, I found out later. But so here I am. I quit at CKNW, and the boss called me in and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to be a play-by-play guy. I just really think that that's what I want to do full time." And he said, "Well, have you got a job to go to?" And I answered, "No," as though, I mean, why would I?
Right.
I'm on top of the world. Somebody's going to call me and offer me a job. So he made a couple of phone calls to places around the league and radio stations where he thought that there might be openings. And of course they said, no, they didn't have any openings. So he looked at me and said, "Why are you leaving? You've got a perfectly good job here." And I said, "No, I'm going to get a play-by-play job out of this." And I had no clue, but, things started to look pretty bleak by September, when the money was running out, and I was living in a truck and camper and circumnavigating Vancouver Island in a 12-foot tin boat, when the summer frivolity was over, I still didn't have a job. But out of the blue, again, got a call at my father's place and an invitation to come to Toronto,
right,
and audition for a job.
Right.
As a play-by-play guy.
We were morphing out of the Hewitt world.
Right.
And it was also the start of the cable world. Before there was TSN, there were three specialty channels put on the air in Canada that were movies and music. And one of them was out of Edmonton that they were in love with hockey because the Oilers were as good as they ever were in those years.
Right.
And they wanted hockey on the air.
And wasn't that Super Channel?
That was Super Channel. So we needed new, younger approaches to the game. And your name came into the mix, and Chris Cuthbert's name came into the mix.
So I go to this audition, John, fly down to Toronto, stay at the Westbury Hotel right next to Maple Leaf Gardens. And on a Saturday night during an exhibition game between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens, really all I knew was that I got one period.
Right.
That was my audition. Chris Cuthbert got one period. Mm-hmm. And Joe Bowen got one period. Mm-hmm. And Mickey Redmond was the common denominator. He was the color commentator for all three of us. Until we actually did it, certainly on my part, I didn't know the other two guys were there, and I'd never met Joe, and I'd never met Chris. We each got a period, and then I went back to the Westbury Hotel, and nothing happened the next day, and a couple of days went by, and I wasn't sure that I was even supposed to be there anymore. And I finally got a call to come to lunch. And
we all get those.
So I came to lunch, and it's like a tribunal.
Yeah.
It's all of the people. In those days, Hockey Night in Canada was the Canadian Sports Network, as you know. And Canadian Sports Network had all of these larger-than-life figures, including Ted Huff, who ran the place, including Frank Selke, mm-hmm. Ralph Mellenby, Don Wallace. And there were other people, Roger Mallion.
Sure.
There were everybody who was Canadian Sports Network, which was the parent company for Hockey Night in Canada, was there at this luncheon. And remember, I was still the guy that you had met, John. I still had this big Fu Manchu mustache. I had hair to my shoulders. I wasn't in my cutoffs in those days. I probably had clean jeans. And I got a free lunch. And
life's pretty good.
Yeah. So all the while, I'm thinking that the job that I was auditioning for, I thought was the radio job. That's what I really wanted. I wanted to be a radio play-by-play guy for the National Hockey League. I recall vividly during this luncheon, at one point, Ted Huff looked at me across the table and said, and asked, if we gave you the TV job, would you shave that mustache off? And I just said, pass the razor. I'm ready to roll. And out of that, I ended up with the Leafs TV job.
Correct.
So I go from, so I had to go back and sell my truck and camper for $175.
Wow.
And get my hockey bag and move to Toronto. And so it started in the television world in 1982. I broadcast, did the play-by-play of the Maple Leaf games on CHCH out of Hamilton. And our season began in Chicago. That's the first TV game that I did. Mm. The Blackhawks at Old Chicago Stadium. So I got my firsts were in pretty cool buildings.
Sure. Sure, when you think about it, when you think that the Montreal Forum, Maple Leaf Gardens was always special. And then to go to Chicago in those days it wasn't full, but it was sure fun.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It was. You're right, it wasn't full in those days, but the buildings had so much character. And so it began, so unbeknownst to me, it's sort of like the call that I got from Al Davidson to move from Brandon to Vancouver. It was kind of similar. I just the call, I wasn't expecting it. The job that I got, I really wasn't expecting it, but welcomed it and dug in and just started moving along.
And then you left hockey.
Not really.
Well, except when you went to TSN, you went to the baseball world.
Well, I did, but I never left the hockey world because initially I had an opportunity when TSN became the first real sports network in Canada and went on the air. I had a chance to move there at day one, in year one, mm-hmm. but they didn't have any hockey.
Right.
So I wouldn't go. It was the following year, I believe, when they got the cable rights to NHL games that I got another call from Jim Thompson, who was running the place in those days, with an opportunity to make a move. And I was ready to do it at that point because I knew that part of my job at TSN would be hockey. And I wasn't going to leave that world. Once I got in it, there wasn't a chance I was leaving it. And the other opportunities came up once I was at TSN to do baseball, the Montreal Expos, and then move over and do the Blue Jays. But all the while that I was doing baseball, I was still doing hockey.
Sure.
And that became problematic towards the end of my baseball time because it was getting harder and harder to do both because of the crossover season.
Remind me, though, you had moved to Toronto. You were doing everything but Hockey Night in Canada for the company.
Right.
Do you remember your first Hockey Night in Canada Saturday night?
It was during the playoffs.
Yes, it was.
And again, it was Vancouver-Calgary. And so there must have been a year where there were lots of Canadian teams in the playoffs. there weren't lots of Canadian teams then, so all of them must have been in. And the only reason that I got any Saturday night work was because on down the line, they didn't have enough guys. And so I got an opportunity to go to Calgary and do, it was a Vancouver-Calgary series. The Flames had not moved into the Saddledome yet.
That's right. It was in the Corral.
It was in the old Calgary Corral. Mm-hmm. And my color commentator was Howie Meeker. And Howie, in his bombastic, wonderful fashion, managed to anger everyone in both cities, so I was afraid to walk down the street with him, but did anyway, because he always told it like he saw it. But it was a memorable series for that reason. But that was the opportunity that I got to do Hockey Night in Canada. But
I think that was 1983, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. But the other thing about those years was that Hockey Night or Canadian Sports Network would loan me out. So even though the playoffs came along and I would be sidelined because there wasn't enough work for me and there were other people that were ahead of me, there were some fledgling networks in the United States, including ESPN, that had just started dabbling in hockey and were doing playoff games, but they had no people who knew the game. They didn't have talent. So one year I went on loan basically to the Washington Capitals for WDCA, I think. Mm. And
we did those for a couple of years.
Yeah. So I got to do those, and then I would get to do ESPN hockey. So I'd travel around, and I got to do a whole bunch of playoff games, never in Canada, but I got the experience of doing playoff games and moving around. So I wasn't completely without work in the spring, but the Hockey Night in Canada work wasn't very often that I got a chance to go on Saturday night in Canada.
In many ways, the rest is history. I mean, we can talk about, you went back to be the regional TV guy for the Canucks. You ended up being the voice of hockey when Sportsnet went on the air in 1997.
Right.
And became a big fixture when they had the national rights. And so, is any of it a blur, or as the older you get, it becomes a blur? How do you pinpoint things? Because you seem to be remembering a lot of the stuff that we all do is when we're in our late teens and early 20s.
Yeah, and then it just you're right. It just sort of happened. There's so much that went on. It got really busy there for a while, you know. And then I was so consumed with my work that that's all I wanted to do. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved going to work every day. I didn't need days off. I didn't care about anything like that. So, but it did get all consuming because between baseball and hockey, I had one April where we still had the cable rights for the early rounds of the playoffs at TSN. And I was also broadcasting Blue Jay games at that time. And I was doing both. I had an April where I think I did 29 games in 29 consecutive days, wow, each one in a different city. So I had to move for each game. Switching back and forth between hockey and baseball.
Was that difficult?
I don't remember it being difficult at the time, but I remember at the end of the month being absolutely exhausted. And I remember at that time thinking, you know what, at some point here, I'm going to have to make a decision because I'm not going to be able to do this all the time. It's just not going to work. And I'm going to wear myself out and I won't be able to do a good enough job at either. So I'm going to have to make a decision. And it was in one of those years that the people at TSN, the Blue Jays were such a big deal for them. And I had moved from doing the Expo games to the Blue Jay games. And it was going to be a bigger product than hockey for them. And I thought at that time that if they were to make the decision for me and pick one sport, they were going to pick baseball. And I was never going to get shut out of hockey. I had made that decision in my mind that, and there were a couple of reasons for it. I loved the game. I had a history in the game. I still played the game. I like the hockey world, but I also like the hockey life. Mm-hmm. I like the life of
summers off.
And there was nothing better than that. That was part of one of the attractions when I when I first quit at CKNW and was looking for a job, is I thought this, you know, I was I'm a Canadian guy. I love the outdoors. I love the outdoors in the summer. I love camping. I love being outside. And as an aside, I had this conversation one time in the dugout at a baseball game with the late Tom Cheek. And Tom was just a wonderful man. And we'd converse and talk about different things about baseball and about life and all of that. And I didn't do all of the games because there were occasions when TSN didn't carry some of the baseball games and I'd have a weekend off. So I was talking to Tom and he was asking me what I was going to do for the weekend and that I had off. And I said, you know what, I'm going camping. My wife and I are taking our son and we're going to go off and camp for a few days. And he said, isn't that interesting? He said, that sounds wonderful. He said, I'm going camping too this fall when the season's over. And I said, who are you going camping with? He said, I'm going with my son. And I said, well, how old is your son? He said, he's 35. And I thought, and he said, it's the first time we've gone camping. And I thought, right then and there, it's a seminal moment where I thought, that is part of the reason that I wouldn't want to do baseball full time. Because it consumes, I love the game, but they insist upon playing every day all summer long. And you just, you know, it's an all-consuming sport if there ever is one for the time that you're doing it. And I like, that was, you know, part of the reason that when I had to make a decision, and I knew at some point I would have to because of the overlap of the two games, that my decision would be the hockey life as opposed to the baseball life.
You know, you were also part of something. You were part of lots of good stuff. When we came out of the work stoppage in 1995, you actually got your face on Hockey Night in Canada a heck of a lot more every Saturday night because you were part of that first group on the satellite hot stove.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. And I don't know if I was really prepared for that, but I jumped at the opportunity to be part of the satellite hot stove. And at the time, I mean, you created that, so you know who was there. It was John Davidson and Al Strachan. Strack was, you know, he was the needle that got everything going, but he was also a reporter and really well-connected. And JD, at that time working out of New York, was also really well-connected in the game. I, much less so, as a younger guy, that hadn't been an area of expertise for me. I was a play-by-play guy. So it really forced me to get on the phone. It forced me to spend a lot more time being a reporter, a position that I'd never really been in. So,
but I tell you, you got the job because it was a geographic advantage.
Yeah, I was the guy in the West.
What the whole show was based on, somebody in America, John Davidson, somebody in Western Canada, because they always feel that they get neglected, Jim Houston.
Right.
And Al Strachan or whomever we deemed to be on that show, where the show was being run from. So that's why you got the job. I'd like to tell you it was because of your journalistic skills.
I was not. That was pretty clear to me all the way.
Yeah.
But I still jumped at the opportunity. I wasn't going to turn it down and say, no, I'm not a reporter. I'm not going to do this. I was that's the type of person I am. I thought, this is an opportunity.
Sure. It was great.
A wonderful opportunity. Yeah. So I jumped at it, and it was fun. Wherever I was doing the Canucks radio games on the weekend, you'd find a studio for me, and I'd go in there and sometimes bluff my way through it. Sometimes I had the odd contribution, but it was really an interesting journey into journalism that I'd not been a part of.
So you touched on something earlier about camping. And you mentioned your wife, your lovely wife, Denise, your kids are all part of this. I would suggest to you that they've made more sacrifices for you to succeed than you have.
Oh, my goodness. Anybody who's a part of a family that works in the hockey industry, you sacrifice so much. You know, I mentioned those days in April where I'm gone for a month. Like, I would literally not walk in the front door of my home for an entire month, and I'd be gone doing a game every day somewhere while my wife was at home with a young child. And they could see me every day and hear me every day, but otherwise we just have to talk on the phone once a day, and that was hard when I was traveling all the time and busy. That you spend your whole life doing that, and then one of the sacrifices you make when you decide to work for something like Hockey Night in Canada is you give up your weekend. And so what happens in the regular world of people is that your social life revolves usually around Fridays and Saturdays, and I'm never there Fridays and Saturdays. That just doesn't happen. Always traveling, always on the road. So yes, those people, the people around you, when you're working the way we do, they give up an awful lot. And certainly never lost on me. But the other thing is, and I don't want to make it just sound like it's really a sad thing, it's a pretty darn good life. Plus, when people only know you in one business, then they grow to expect that. Mm-hmm. And so in our home, it was expected that, you know, when our kids were young, dad's leaving, but you know he's coming back, and you know what he's doing when he's gone, and this is just part of our life. And you have to work extra hard when you're home to try and fit in with all of the things that you want to do, but you miss an awful lot of very important days that you never really get back, but it's just really part of the business. You have to accept that if you accept the job you want to do.
Do you have a favorite game that you've called since you've become the voice of Hockey Night in Canada?
You know, I honestly can't think of one. I've had so many opportunities to do really big games, to do Stanley Cup finals, to do Olympics, World Cup, that sort of thing. And it's truly honored to be able to say that I went to all of those games. But I don't necessarily have a favorite one. They're all separate entities. Everyone, you know, every game has its own character. Every series has its own storylines and takes on characteristics of itself. The life of being around the rink for the biggest games in general is pretty darn good. I'd love to say that I'd get an opportunity at some point to call a Stanley Cup championship when a Canadian team finally wins the cup again, because that would be extra special. They've come close a couple of times when I've been involved. But no, I can't think of a single game. You know, the gold medal game in Sochi mm-hmm. was a big deal because it was Olympics and it was best on best.
Right.
And it was such a well-played game that one kind of stands out. But in terms of calls, John, I've always felt that when people ask me, you know, what my favorite call is, I always say the same thing. And that's my favorite moments on television as a play-by-play caller have usually been when I've had the good sense to shut up.
Yeah. Good point. That's some of the best television is when people don't talk. So
exactly.
One last question. How long are you going to do this for?
Till they throw me out or I get tired of it, one of the two, and I'm not sure which will come first. They, you know, it's I still thoroughly enjoy the game. In fact, I like the game now. I love the way it's played right now, but probably at this point in my life, I understand what I'm watching better than I ever have. So because I watch so much darn hockey, you know, and I live on the West Coast and I start watching at 4 every afternoon and watch 2 games a day at least as I prepare to go to work on the weekend. So I still enjoy the preparation. Travel's not ruining me yet. And yeah, so I'm going to do it. I think I will know. I would like to be like Danny Gallivan. I will know when it's time. Jim Robson did the same thing, and those are two of the people I admire the most in the industry. Mm-hmm. They knew when it was time to go. And I'll know, in the back of my mind, I'll know that it's that I'm finished. But, I mean, that sounds really fatalistic, doesn't it? That's not right now.
Well, there'll be a camper and a boat on Vancouver Island waiting for you, so...
Yeah, and it'll probably be worth more than the $175 I got for the beauties that I left behind.
Jim Hewson, Foster Hewitt Award winner, congratulations. Enjoy the weekend on the 15th to the 18th, and it's something well-deserved for you and what you've done in your career.
Thank you, John. This has been the most interesting time reliving some of the great memories of my life.
That's my friend Jim Hewson, the voice of Hockey Night in Canada on CBC. Thanks for listening to this edition of Induction Class. I'm John Shannon. Remember, don't forget to rate and review this podcast and thanks for listening.